Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the GAR. My name is Lee Costello and I'm delighted to say that today's episode is populated mostly by Tyrone men. That's how I feel like it should always be. Kyle Coney has come back onto the show. How's it going, Kyle?
Oh, good lads, good to be back.
Good stuff. And then as always, the other half of the GAR duo is Niall McIntyre. And Niall, you're bursting to start a row. You want to get stuck into Kyle?
Well, look, it's tough for the two Tyrone men here after the last weekend. So I'm just here to bring the mood up a small bit. But I seen Kyle was tweeting about Joanne Cantwell and Donal O'Cusack, and I think it was nearly the talking point of the weekend. Everyone's given out about it. Everyone's given out about Donal O'Cusack. Everyone's given out about Joanne. There's people on both sides of it. It over 1 million views on the Sunday Game Twitter account. So everybody had seen it. And Donal O'Cusack is still trending on Twitter today. So I seen Kyle was on Joanne's side, I think.
I put up a tweet like might have been last night or yesterday evening, just after seeing watched some of the hurling as well, and then seen that clip obviously surface on Twitter, and I suppose whenever you listen to the comments then that was made on the Morning Ireland show saying that, you know, it was like a grand national for also rounds. It's I think it's degrading on the competition as a whole, and then as you know, the players that's involved in that, because you know, we have secondary competitions or we have second tier competitions right across. You know, club football, they work perfectly. They have them in hurling, so I don't see the reason for him to make those comments. Look, he made them, and then whenever he was pressed on it, he didn't want to answer it. You know, he was pushing back with a nonsense answer to Joanne, saying that, you know, she misquoted him when, you know, the quotes are out there for everybody to go and pick up, to go and read. And, you know, if he had come out and doubled down on the statement and said, look, this is what I mean, fair play. But he didn't give any kind of answer, and that's what people were, I think, sort of more annoyed at.
I think people are giving out yesterday, they're giving out about Joanne, that when the Munster hurling is on, that she wants to talk about this and she's bringing this up. And there's people going to be listening to us now and they'll be like, lads, there was mad games of hurling and football on all over the country at the weekend, and you're talking about this. But at the same time, it's the talking about it. It's what everyone was talking about, because, like, only last week or 2 weeks ago, I thought it was funny. It was reading Joe Brawley's article, and he was giving out stink in the Sunday Independent about the Sunday game being so boring and everyone being so by the script, and nobody was saying, kind of, you know, out of line. And yesterday we have something like that, and you know, it's a bit of fun, and pundits kind of showing a bit of personality, I suppose. And then everyone's giving out again, saying, would you not just talk about the hurling? And Joe Brawley included, he tweeted at the end of the game, he was like, great Munster Championship Sunday, even though Donal O'Cusack tried to ruin it, or something like this. So, do you know, you can't really win as a pundit. Which, so,
the problem is nowadays is Twitter. That's the problem. We all have an opinion, and then it goes on a scale where you know, if one person clicks into their share, someone else, then it can blow up in no time. But I think probably from Joanne's point of view, she might, I'm not sure if she had, you know, done loan, she hadn't come across him maybe from that, she hadn't had a chance to speak to him, or, you know, and he was just pressed on comments that he did make from, you know, and that was her opportunity for him on the national stage, you know, till I suppose just to elaborate on the remarks that he did make.
Yeah, he definitely didn't do it anyway.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. Sorry, Niall, you're saying that Donal Logue is now the Joe Brawley of the Sunday game. That's your words, I think. I'm pretty much
right. Maybe so, and and Joe Brawley hates him.
Oh, well, yeah, so. That would be the Joe Brawley thing, to be fair.
Whatever he thinks of that.
But it is interesting, though, because, like, I don't know, from a journalist point of view, you've made these comments and you're being asked to qualify them, you know, on the next time that you're on a broadcast station. As such, like, I mean, it probably is fair enough to ask, no?
Yeah, like, it's hilarious. Half the people on Twitter are like yeah, why is Joanne going there to talk about the hurling? And at the same time, when I'm watching that, I'm like, oh, yes, this is good now. I can't wait to see what he says to this. Like, that's what yeah, you want to see, a bit of crack between them. And I'd be on Kyle's side. I thought Joanne was dead right to put him on the spot
yeah,
after what he said. Like, he's well able for it. He's in that game a long time. And I thought she was dead right to stay going at him as well, because he was giving her no answer. He was taking her up and being misquoted. I think the misquote he had in his mind was that she didn't say disappointed. She okay, just said a Grand National for all for France. But that's just petty stuff.
Yeah.
From him. Okay. So he, do you know, it's like when a lad starts correcting your spelling or something. I think he was fighting a losing battle. But
here, Kyle, have you ever been misquoted or got into a little bit of a row with a journalist? Thankfully not us so far.
No, funny enough, it hasn't been too bad yet. Now, I'm not saying that mightn't happen, but look, live TV, you know, I do some radio stuff for the co-commentary games on RTE, and look, you can come out with things that you're commentating on games and you're on live that you can't pull back, because it's out there, it's gone, there's nothing you can do. And I understand that Donal Logue said those things. So it was an option, it was a chance yesterday. Either, you know, you go one of two ways. You either double down on what you say, this is your opinion, or you say, you know, maybe that was wrong and how it came across, because, you know, I didn't mean it like that. This is how I did mean it, you know. So he had two options. He took neither. He tried to use the misquote on Joanna, and I think that's probably where people were finding the grey area.
You know, absolutely. Well, there was games of football and there was games of hurling. Yeah, definitely. Believe it or not. We do get to the hurling later on, so please don't come at us about that. But just to start with the football, we'll go with Mayo and Kerry to begin with. Now, you got to give it to Michael Murthy. He called this before the game. He didn't think Kerry had the depth that they once had and that they were going to struggle, and that's sort of how it panned out.
Yeah, he was dead right, and he went for the juggler there. He was like, we're still looking at Paul Geaney, we're still looking at Tony Brosnan. And, do you know, he had obviously seen that Kerry, he thought anyway, they hadn't evolved. And I suppose maybe we were maybe giving them a bit of the, just in your head, you're like, do you know, that Clare performance, they were so good that day. They're coming back into it. Mm. They'd been slow in the league, but we were kind of always giving them the excuse of they won the All-Ireland last year and that can happen. You were on your team holiday, you mightn't have been fit or whatever, but it was, you know, they could easily beat the likes of Clare and Tipperary and Munster. That's second nature to them, but this was the real test. And Kerry just, we were seeing what we were seeing in the league, and it was Kerry, they didn't look as fit as Mayo. They weren't getting close to Mayo. In midfield, Mayo were just, Matthew Ron in particular,
yeah. Just
Jordan Flynn, these boys, Dermot O'Connor, just bombing away from the Kerry lads, and Kerry not getting close to them. Tadhg Morley isolated under serious pressure with lads running off shoulders, and there's not much he can do. And I suppose it does probably come back to that. Kerry have such like amazing forwards, but they're probably not the best working forwards, and that puts them under pressure around the middle.
No, definitely. It's sort of the battle around the middle was nearly the difference in the end, Kyle. Matthew Ryan and Dermot O'Connor up against Jack Barry, and obviously Kerry's Dermot O'Connor. You know, It was nearly two different levels. Since David Moran left, and now actually the injury to Stefano Cumber even looks worse now, you know, because he was going really well in the league. Is this a gap in the Kerry team?
I'm not sure if it's a glaring gap as such, because I think we're probably not giving enough credit to Matthew Ryan, who in 2021 was in for a shout for Footballer of the Year. Maybe didn't have the best final coming up against the two lads from Tyrone, but he has hit exceptional form. That break of 5 or 6 weeks seems to have done him the world of good. His league performances probably wasn't at the standard that he had wanted. Been a long campaign for him, and then I suppose those few weeks break. I know there's a few of the Mayo lads. I know Aidan O'Shea had went to the Sun. There was a few other rest of them as well had gone away. A few of them obviously back to their clubs, but that break seems to have re-energized them, give them that wee bit of time to maybe even clear up a niggle or two and hit the ground running again. But Matthew Ryan on Saturday was just a joy to watch. The power of his running reminds you know, of how Brian Fenton goes about his business. Once he gets up to top speed, there's not much stopping him, and well able to kick a score as well. But they were the dominant force throughout the game. They were underneath ball, catching ball, and then all of a sudden, whenever Mayo were running it, if they didn't kick it into Aidan O'Shea, it was either Dermot O'Connor or Matthew Ryan who was breaking lines. So they were exceptional, and I know that Kevin McStay he'd be pleased with that, getting those two lads to, you know, a partnership in midfield. If you're winning that area, it gives you a great stranglehold on a game.
No, absolutely, and it really was a brilliant team performance. And actually, when you look at the Mayo team and where the scores were coming from, it was like Ryan O'Donoghue got 5 points, Aidan O'Shea got 3, James Carr got 3, all of the half forwards got a point each, Matthew Ryan got a point, 2 halfbacks got a point, Owen McLaughlin comes off the bench, gets a goal, and someone else comes off the bench, maybe Loftus or Durkin.
Paddy Durkin
got a point as well. It's worked out something like 11 different scores, and then you compare that to Kerry, who I think was only 5 different scores, and 8 points coming from David Clifford alone. Like, are they too reliant on David to perform miracles, Kay?
Every week or every game you see David Clifford, he does something that you think that's not, you know, it's nearly impossible to do. Mm-hmm. He kicks that ball from the 45, you know, sidesteps Padraig O'Hara, and that's like a pass inside, but he has the ability to with the power of the kick that he has to knock it over the bar. But whenever you look back at the 5 scorers, you know, 8 points obviously that David Clifford had, probably a wee bit over reliant. Yes, he takes the free kicks. Shawnee O'Shea, I think he got 3 points at the weekend. Dara Moynihan a point, and Paddy Clifford didn't score. So that's your half forward line. So they probably are a wee bit over reliant on him. Normally, he does find the net. I know he had 2 chances saved as well. So he could have finished very handy in the game with 2-8. So to answer your question, it looks, you know, the stats would point in the direction that they probably are at the minute that wee bit more over reliant on David Clifford. There's no way that you're not going to stop him from scoring. You know, that's a given on any day. He's going to knock over a few points with him taking the freeze as well. So they would need probably Paul Gainey, Tony Brosnan. I know Stephen O'Brien, come on. Shawnee O'Shea, I think he maybe is 2 frees, 1 from play. So you would like to see Shawnee maybe pick up the mantle a wee bit and get a few scores from play, as well as, you know, Paddy Clifford. We know he's probably, he's assisting a lot of these scores. He's his hand in an awful lot of stuff that Kerry do well. But if they can get him on the score sheet like they did last year, you know, it'll take a wee bit of pressure off David and it'll help him, you know, along the way of winning those games against the bigger teams.
No, absolutely. And I think Thomas Sullivan got 2 points from Kerry as well, which is obviously a brilliant asset to have, but you don't want to be relying on your cornerback to get more scores than your corner forward. Kyle made the point there about Sean O'Shea, Niall, not picking up really the form that he was in last year. He seems to come in and out of games, or, you know, Kerry can't seem to bring him into the game like they used to. Do you think that's because of the midfield and missing David Moran maybe, or them working forwards like you said?
I suppose David Moran he's a huge loss there in midfield. They probably don't have that fetching midfielder there now to, you know, when you're under pressure, get the kick out to him, he'll win it. And, do you know, it cuts a lot of messing out of it, kind of. Just get it down to him and, you know, we'll build from there. So, Sean O'Shea, yeah, just looked a small bit heavy-legged there at the weekend and wasn't moving with his own, the bit of zip and speed that that he's used to. And Sam Callan was on him and just seemed to have him, whenever there was a race to the ball or a 50-50, he was kind of the man that was coming out on top in it. So, Mayo just kind of blitzed Kerry with that pure athleticism and everybody bombing forward and everyone bombing off the shoulders and ready to, if they had one man under pressure, there's another lad straight into a system, and they were just getting by Kerry so easy. And as Kyle said, like, Matty Ruan just seems to be, he exemplifies their team and the way they play, really, in that when he gets the ball, he's just ready to take on anyone. And it was for one of them James Carr points, he got the ball out on the left wing, and it was David Clifford and someone else, I'm not sure who it was, they were standing him up. But Matty Ruan just goes in past them, two more lads come to him, and he just cuts in through the middle of them. And, he's a lot of support there in the likes of Dermot O'Connor, Owen McLaughlin. Like, we know all these hard runners that Mayo have. And Kerry, they just weren't able to stick with them. Didn't seem to have that, whether it was a mix of the fitness or the work rate, a mix of the two, I suppose, to stick with them on Saturday anyway.
Oh, absolutely. And then we talked a lot about Matty Ryan and the game he had, but actually it was Aidan O'Shea who got man of the match. And, and he was excellent yet again. It seems like, from the outside looking in, there's obviously more to it. He's playing with a lot of confidence, and you can tell that from the fact that he's taking the frees. Like, when was the last time you seen Aidan O'Shea take frees? He would have had a reputation negatively, nearly, that, oh, he misses these shots sometimes. But, like, that's just how confident he is at the minute. Kyle, is this all because they're playing him in the right position? And it's got me thinking, like, how many county careers have we missed out on seeing because these players weren't maybe being utilised?
I would add another point to that in regards to, sometimes it gets lost in translation. Sometimes with, if you have a big full forward, you need to lump it in. If you're around the middle of the field, get it in high. Yes, you can do that the odd time, surely. That's not, but there's a way of putting that. There's a way of putting that ball in to a big man. Aidan O'Shea is well capable of winning the ball out in front too, because he is quick over those first 3, 4, 5 yards. And look, he is a huge frame of a man to get round. He is the capability of holding you with one hand and collecting the ball with the other. He has played a bit of basketball in his time as well, so that will have come into that. But I do think it's with the delivery of the ball into him as well. Any time that Mayo have the chance, the quality of the ball going inside from Dermot O'Connor, whether it be Paddy Durkin, Matty Ryan coming, it's always to the forward side. If Aidan O'Shea is making a run to the left of the post, it's to his side where he's strong enough to hold off the defender, pick it up. And if he is taking on men, or else he has the runners coming off them. So it's, for me, it's always been crying out for him at full forward. When he has been in there in previous years under previous managers, all of a sudden the ball's just drove down the pitch, high as it and long as it can go. Full back's coming out, the keeper's coming out, everybody's competing, breaking ball, snapped up, and it's up the field again. So I think it's a combination of two. Aidan O'Shea is playing really, really well. Kevin McStay has got his confidence back. Give him the free kick mantle. He's excelling in that. And the delivery of the ball inside, it makes a huge difference to the forward. It makes the forward's life a whole lot easier. And I'm sure that Aidan will be thinking that as well.
No, absolutely. And like, it's not like Aidan O'Shea's came from nowhere and he hasn't had any success. He's got All-Stars, umpteenth amount of All-Ireland finals, played just about every position for Mayo and had real success. It's just in recent years, they've been struggling to get him into the game. His career, Kyle, is sort of ran parallel to yourself, I think. You're similar age, 32, 33. And did you play him in the 2008 minor final? Was he involved in that Mayo team?
Yeah. He was indeed. He actually played a lot of football that year at middle of the field. So he did. He was a scorer at that. He kicked the first game until it was a draw, and Aidan O'Shea got man of the match. He kicked a couple of magnificent scores. So he was well able to score and is well able to score. So, you know, it's no surprise to me that he's got that confidence back in himself. A lot of his football have been played, you know, as I say, under different managers, have been played around middle of the field, centre, half back. You know, we know he played in one of those famous games of Kerry, he ended up playing full back. But, you know, a lot of his play is behind the ball. So, you know, he wasn't getting opportunities to score. Yes, he'd missed a few chances in the All-Ireland final. But, you know, if Mayo got to an All-Ireland final, you'd be sure that he would score now. But, yeah, his career, I mean, him would have played against each other for a few years, all right.
No, sure. And then another player I'd like to talk about is Ryan O'Donoghue. I just really love him as a footballer, and I love the idea that Kevin McStay keeps him in the full forward line because of his work rate and his speed and just his pure doggedness. I bet there's a temptation to make him into a half or sort of a working half forward kind of role, but to keep him inside, he's unbelievable in the tight spaces. He's so brave. He wins every ball. I mean, I don't know, like, is he sort of, I may be exaggerating how small he is, but is maybe it's because he's next to Aidan O'Shea and James Carr, but does he give hope for, you know, the smaller footballers that there's still a room for them at the county game?
I suppose he does, and he's such a tiger, isn't he? And yeah. You've seen it with that very first mark he won early on. He comes flying out to the ball, takes it nearly in the air, like, and ends up on the ground. And he's tigerish, he's brave, he's always showing for the ball. He'll take on the shots when they're there to be taken. And I suppose, you know, he's clever as well, and you just love having him in there because he'll spot little chances for a goal. Like, even that one, that first mark he won, and it kind of summed up Kerry as well. Dermot O'Connor, Mark and Dermot O'Connor, that got a bit confusing, yeah. I'd say, for the lads commentating on that. But Mayo's Dermot O'Connor made the run down the middle, and Kerry's Dermot O'Connor was very slow to track him. And Mayo's Dermot O'Connor nearly got in for the goal, like, and this was only after, you know, 2 minutes. And I suppose it summed up that kind of Mayo were the ones, they were proactive, and Kerry were the ones kind of just reacting to them. Mm-hmm. And it's that creativity from O'Donoghue is, and you know, he's so punchy in his blitz of play. Like, you know, he comes with purpose, like, and he knows what he's doing. And love having him in there.
Well, apparently he was a very decent boxer in his day, so punchy is maybe the right word to describe him. We talked a little bit, like, Kerry's lack of depth. Maybe, you know, they're missing that coming off the bench and potential gaps in midfield or whatever. But Mayo, that's definitely a strength for them. And you look at someone like Tommy Conroy now, who Kevin McStay clearly sees him as a finisher, you know, someone to come off the bench and drive at players, even the same Owen McLaughlin. Like, these are two boys that would have started under James Horne. Kevin McStay's found a different role from him. Probably not what they would prefer, but, like, it's massive having players like that coming off the bench, Kay.
Absolutely. Mayo probably, in my opinion, finished the game with a stronger team than they started with. You know, Paddy Durkin also coming on, that he can, well, able to get a score as well. But the likes of, when you look at Owen McLaughlin and you look at Tommy Conroy and what they've got in abundance is pace. Mm-hmm. You know, when that game was frantic, it was score for score, it was end to end, there was a serious amount of ground cover, there was wide open spaces. And we've seen that with the Owen McLaughlin goal, just bombed down the middle, got the flick pass and buried it in the back of the net. You know, maybe Kevin McStay's thinking behind this is, whenever a game, you know, gets stretched at whatever moment he thinks, you know, where that may be 15, 20 minutes after half time, we need, you know, fresh legs. You know, if you're a cornerback or you're a wing forward, you think of seeing Tommy Conroy come or Owen McLaughlin because they've got frightening pace. Both men have an eye for a goal. I think it was the Sigerson Cup this year. I think I seen Owen McLaughlin score, maybe it was last year, but I seen a clip very recently of him scoring a goal coming from his half back line, a couple of 1-2s and found the net as well. But it seems to be that's the way they want to go. Their strength and depth is massive in this Mayo team, and it just doesn't look as strong on the Kerry side. But, you know, you have to give credit to Kevin McStay. Kerry looked like the team that had the 5 or 6 week break, and Mayo had no ring rust at all.
Yeah, that's probably a good summary of it. You talked there about, like, how the Kerry defenders would see them players coming on and how that would make them feel. But it also gives the Mayo players a real boost. Like, if you're feeling a bit tired and you see you know, Tommy Conroy's coming on, you get a little bit of a lift. Can you think of anyone maybe in your Tyrone career, or even just for Arbo, that would have had to perform that sort of late impact role that would have give the team a real surge coming late on?
I suppose in more recent times, it's come to law. It's really been emphasised throughout Ireland that, you know, teams have starting teams and finishing teams. Probably in my Tyrone career, it was more that, you know, you wanted to be on the starting 15. That was the end goal, or that was the goal at the, you know, any Thursday night that a team was ever named, you wanted to be on the starting 15. But the way things went, maybe his last, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years, teams have realised, right, you know, you can empty the tank in 40, 45 minutes, and we have got, you know, Tommy Conroy, we have got Paddy Durkin. I know Paddy will probably end up starting, Owen McLaughlin, but it's evolved now from back whenever, you know, probably 2018, 2017, whenever, you know, we were under our Tyrone career. But there's no one really that stands out. I suppose one player maybe that made an impact every time he came on, and he had pace in abundance too, was Martin Penrose. You know, if he didn't start, you can be sure that he was going to have some impact in the game, and probably one of the most underrated tacklers in the Tyrone. Not underrated, but he was rated within ourselves. But as a forward, you're not normally known for being the best tackler, you know, in the team. But Martin Penrose was a serious man for getting a turnover whenever there was maybe a short kick out or there was a high press. He was one of the men that would be, you know, he would be sure to get a turnover.
Yeah, and he's still doing the business now. I think he's in his 40s. And
yeah, he came on the league game against Arbo on Friday night.
And how did he do?
Oh, he was there, but he came on the last, I think it was 10 minutes or so, but he was on the winning side, so okay. That's all that really matters, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'll not push you on that one then, because we've another team of ours, I guess, that lost, and that was Tyrone against Galway. It was a bit disappointing, Kyle, because like the game was almost spoiled by the red card to Frank Burns. Now, listen, it was a fully deserving red card, but I just mean that, you know, they had this 5-week training block, and we're all dying to see what Tyrone did with it. And then, you know, when the sending off happened away from home, the bad weather, it then just felt like, you know, they're trying to save the game rather than, you know, being able to show what it is they'd been working on.
Yeah, and they did beat Mayo in a challenge game in the meantime, you know, in that period of time off. So, you know, if Mayo would be, we've seen how they were going, and Tyrone played Mayo and, you know, obviously got the result. I know challenge games and friendly games are not always about the result. It's more about, you know, what you're trying to do, how you're trying to set up for the opponent. But I'm sure it would have given a good indication of where they're at, coming up against a strong Mayo side. But probably going back to the red card, you know, Frank will have no bother saying himself it was a red card. He was taking off the gloves before he got off the ground. So it was a mistimed, you know, tackle. He come, you know, as soon as anything touches the head nowadays, it's going to be a red card. And with the force that he come at, there was no, I don't even know why David Goff needed to discuss with the linesman, because maybe he didn't have a great angle of it, but it was a red card. But yeah, those 5 or 6 weeks off, we thought that Tyrone went away and working on the things, whatever they needed to do. But probably what I was more disappointed in was that we seemed to have persisted with a half forward line. You know, we have a club man named Michael O'Neill. Michael doesn't play centre half forward. He lines out at 11 and obviously drops back to plug holes and gaps. But if they're persistent in putting Michael into the team, which he's deserving of a spot, I think we've got to get him into the half back line. We have Frank Burns, probably not notorious for scoring either, and you have Joe Goose, relatively new on the scene, so it's not known what he's going to bring. I think we need to, you know, go with a bit more of an attacking half forward line. I looked at the so-called top teams in their most recent games. Dublin have a half forward line of Niall Scully, Conor Callaghan, and Kieran Kilkenny. Last day, Conn got 4, Kieran Kilkenny got 1. Mayo of a half forward line at the weekend of Jack Kearney, Jordan Flynn, Jason Doherty, all scoring. Galway the same, all scoring. We've no scores from a half forward line, and with two probably defenders starting in there. So for me, you know, I don't think Tyrone learned a lesson against Monaghan. Yes, a really, really good first half, but the second half, again, we're persisting with forwards, defenders playing as forwards or in forwards positions. I know they mightn't exactly play there, but once you line them out there, you're taking away from, you know, you're taking away your scoring threat. We're relying on Darren McCurry, we're relying on Matty Donnelly, and we're relying on Darragh Kenavan. Darragh Kenavan was relatively well shut out at the weekend by Galway. Darren McCurry got 7 points, I think, and I'm not sure if Matty Donnelly got scoring. So that's where I feel the top teams have scores from their half forward line. At the minute, Tyrone are not getting enough scores from that area of the pitch.
I hope I'm up on you on the spot now, but I think you'd said before that you didn't really agree with playing defenders in the half forward line and vice versa. Another way a lot of players or a lot of teams do that to like maybe pick up man marking roles and things. But do you see any correlation there with what Kyle's saying? Is it a case of attackers should be playing attacking roles and you're just, you know, robbing Peter to pay Tom kind of thing?
Yeah. Robin Peter to pay Tom this first summer.
What is it? Paul?
Paul, I think, yeah.
Don't know who Tom is.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I think, do you know, it's a strange one, especially when you have Kieran McGeary there, former player of the year, and I know he has been struggling, and you'd be able to tell a bit more about that, but like a former player of the year on the bench it's never a great sign, really, is it? Like,
no. And no, it definitely
kind of,
is.
It sums up kind of like McShane as well. Do you know, from the team that won the All-Ireland, you have McGeary not on the team. McShane isn't there. Conor McKenna is a huge loss. And do you know, Tiernan McCann is gone. Have Tyrone, they don't seem to, like they haven't replaced them lads with better lads, or they haven't improved on them lads. And them lads are obviously huge losses as well. So that obviously takes away from Tyrone.
The Kieran McGeary one is interesting, like in player of the year, and he was just unbelievable that season. He genuinely was. Now, to be fair, I don't know if he would solve the half-forward problem. We played him at half-back, I think, most of that year, but he did bring a lot coming forward. He did play half-forward against Donegal, actually, and I think got 3 points. Kyle, what do you think that's about, like, in terms of form? Is that because he's being earmarked more by the opposition, trying to shut him out as a form of supply, or do you have any insight for us?
I'm not entirely sure. I would put it down to maybe more form. Maybe just Kieran's not in the form that he was in the year that he got player of the year, 2021. But it's I have no real insight to why that is. Kieran probably not known for being, you know, a chief scorer either. You know, 3 points would probably be, you know, that's Kieran probably at his max in that regard. He got 3 points against Donegal that year in the championship. He did peg on a few great scorers throughout, you know, Tyrone's run to the All Ireland final and winning it that year. But to me, you know, Matthew Taney scored 2-7 against Galway or Sligo in the I know the opposition's not where Tyrone is in Tyrone Galway, but he scored 2-7 against Sligo. Peter Cook got 2 points against Tyrone the weekend. Johnny Heaney got a point. Matthew Taney got another score as well. So to me, I just think we need. I understand that you probably need one working half forward in your team, but for me, I would like to keep my two inside men. You know, obviously, whenever it's slow attack, players naturally drift behind the ball. Everyone gets 14, 15 players behind the ball. But whenever the opportunity arises, and there'll be plenty of times in the game to get 3-4 people ahead of the ball, we seem to only have Darren McCurry and Darragh Kenavan. And it's going to struggle to beat opposition teams whenever, if they nullify our two chief score getters, where's the rest of our scores getting coming from? I know there'd have been a bit of talk about Rory Kenavan being, you know, there was talk of him maybe making his debut at the weekend, seeing a small glimpse of him. You know, That game at the weekend was a chance to get him into the team at number 12, at number 11, whatever it may be, play him in corner forward and play the three of them up top, him, Darren, and the brother, Dar, just to give somebody something else to think about. You know, yes, a lot of teams know him from under 20, but he's relatively unknown at the senior team. That man in there, you know, unknown, who's not to say he doesn't get a goal, who's not to say he doesn't kick 3 points, and it's just the difference in those games. For me, it's just a wee bit cautious and a wee bit safe just at the moment with the Tyrone lineup. You can probably name 13, 14 of them every week. Cahill McShane seems to have gone off the radar a bit as well. He wasn't in the panel. I'm not sure if he was injured or what was going on at the weekend. I don't know either. So we're limited for scores up front whenever we can put a shackle on the two lads.
No, they absolutely are. I did want to mention one player, we've talked about him the last time you were on the show, is Matty Donnelly. And I actually thought he played pretty well. He showed real leadership, especially because there was positives to the game in the sense that, you know, Drum were a man down and then they went two men down when Niall Morgan got the black card, and they did well to stay within the game. You know, Galway never were able to finish in the moth, and I think Matty Donnelly's leadership just looks really clear on the pitch. Were you surprised initially when Duher and Logan came in and they took the captaincy off him, because you'd mentioned before about his leadership qualities? Now, Hamsey obviously went on, did an unbelievable job captaining him to an All-Ireland, and he did fantastic yesterday, I thought, on Comer. But it didn't feel like a change that needed to happen. I don't know, like, was it surprising to you?
I would say I was shocked at that appointment. Not appointment, there's nothing. I was shocked just that the decision was made, because, you know, maybe, yes, a new management didn't want it to freshen the whole scene and freshen the panel up. Surely that, you know, they can do that. But, you know, Matty wasn't on the decline, in my opinion, and isn't on the decline. The last two times I have seen him play, I was really, really impressed with him against Monaghan. Yes, taken off wrongly, in my opinion, again. And then at the weekend, I think he's back to his ability of being able to stand players up and take them on, get past them, where maybe Matty had suffered a hamstring, a really bad hamstring injury a few times. Once it came off the bone, and the second time it was something very, very similar. So maybe it has took that length of time for him to get back up to the speed of the game. And, you know, at county level is another... it's another level faster. You've seen Shawnee O'Donnell coming onto the pitch, you know, a lad that hasn't played inter-county football at all at senior level, just thought maybe he had that 1 or 2 seconds on the ball, but you don't have that time. But Matty seems to be a man that is back to his best. And going back to your point, or going back to your question, the taking the captaincy off him was probably a shock to most people, because nobody really seen it coming, so it was a bit left field in that regard. But, you know, it was one that worked out in the decision in the year they went on to win the All-Ireland. But knowing Matty Donnelly, like I do, played with him for 10 or 12 years from minor level, that won't have had any real impact on him as a person, because he lives and breathes the game, and it won't have any negative impact on him. Probably in any sense, it might have spurred him on a bit to say, you know, I can still do it at this level, so, but it wouldn't have any impact on him.
Oh, you know, I think that's clear to see. Just one last point in Tyrone, and we'll talk a little bit Galway, Niall. In discipline, a little bit, we talked about the red card, then Niall Morgan got a black card, I think, for mouthing to David Cole. Like, that's disappointing, you know, one of your more experienced players, you know, you're losing him for that reason. And I think later on in the game, Michael McKernan did something that made a free get taken in closer, a handier free for Shane Walsh. You know, silly things. Like, I get that Tyrone are trying to prove everyone wrong. They're trying to do that whole siege mentality thing, dig in, and they're trying to play with a bit of an edge, you know, and bring out the best in themselves. But when it spills over to indiscipline, do you see that as an issue?
Yeah, like, there's a big difference, isn't there, between, you know, playing with that edge to doing things like Niall Morgan and like Mike McKernan that are just, they're self-defeatist, really. And it's kind of it's a sign of a lad who's, you know, who's kind of just losing the head a small bit and not focusing on what they should be doing. So I suppose that was disappointing. The Frank Burns one was, you know, it was an obvious red card. And as Kyle said, you could see him taking off the gloves. He knew this red card was coming. But I suppose, as you said at the very start, Lee, like, that did, it changed the complexion of the whole game. And it did, it put Tyrone... just put them on the back foot and took away from, you know, what they could do in the game, I suppose, when they're down to 14 men. And, like, in fairness to them, you know, they defended very well, and they gave, like, maybe some of that is down to Galway, because even when Galway did get to the point, her own were down to 13 men, Galway were still, you know, it was a level game for those 10 minutes. Peter Cook got a point and Tyrone got a point. So Galway, they only do enough, as much as they have to do, really. And we've seen that so many times in the last few years. They don't seem to be willing to if when they get the when they smell blood, they kind of just they take it. If they have a 2-point, 3-point lead, they just stay there.
Yeah,
they don't go too much further. So maybe it's a mix of that. Tyrone defending well, Galway not going for the juggler as such. But I'd agree with Kyle. It's do you know that way that they've no forwards in the like a, two lads who are defenders playing in the half forward, and it's not going to. Do you know, it's not going to, it puts a lot of pressure on the likes of Darren McCurry and the likes of Darragh Canavan, because you're, you know, it's coming down to them to get the most of your scores. Like, so a mix of the two, I suppose. Just the Frank Burns thing, it probably, and the wet conditions in Everton probably just messed the game yeah. up a small bit.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. I guess you made the point about there's half forwards and the half backs and conditions away from home. There's a lot, you know, that was sort of going wrong for Tyrone, and Galway had a lot of the advantages, you know, and they're already a brilliant team and they were already on the crest of a wave, Connacht champions, all the rest of it. The fact that they didn't put their foot down and go for the kill must be a bit disappointing for Galway fans. Kyle, they very much set their phaser to stun rather than kill, you know, like, is that, are they being too careful? Is it cautious? Was it down to Tyrone? Is that just a weakness in the Galway setup?
I suppose I know I listened to Padraig Joyce after the game, and he wasn't overly impressed with the performance of Galway, probably with, you know, Tyrone going down till 13 men, now Morgan going off the pitch, Peter Hart having to go into goals. But if there's one team that's able to probably cope, and, you know, Tyrone will have had worked in scenarios, you can be sure that they'll have worked on those type of scenarios. Maybe not going to 13, but there's a chance that every day you go out, someone might get lined with a tackle, or there's every chance that Black Charge can happen at the moment. But they will have set up that scenario to drop loads of people behind the ball, slow it up in order that they get down to 13 men for a period of time, and then Morgan was off the pitch as well. But when you get bodies behind the ball, those types of conditions as well, the ball was so wet, so slippery. There was a huge shower of rain just before the throw, and it being a relatively dry day, that it made the ball like a bar of soap, you know. So probably it's probably come down to both factors in regards to Galway not going for the kill, not smelling blood, and putting Tyrone to the sword whenever there was 13. Only had 13 on the pitch, but you know, you've got to give Tyrone credit in that regard. You know, they kept the ball. Peter Hart's first kick out, Tyrone actually won it. They put it on, you know, took no risks, put it on top of Brian Kennedy. Tyrone picked up the break and went up the pitch. I think they may have got a score from one of those as well. So it probably comes down to a combination of two things. But I wouldn't necessarily say that Galway don't go for the kill. You know, the last year in the All-Ireland final, you know, they went toe-to-toe with Kerry, coming down into the stretch the last few minutes, they were thereabouts, and it's probably just comes down till maybe the last day out, not having been tested against, not being tested against Sligo, really, and that preparation, you know, not having a game in between. So I would say it comes down to that. I'd be looking forward to the next day out, to see how they get on. I think it's maybe Westmeath that they play the next day out, so you know, maybe that position's not where it needs to be, but it'd be another opportunity for them, you know, to put up a big score.
And yeah. Only the last day when we were watching the Sunday game, and Paul Flynn and Lee Keegan said that Tyrone are their best contenders for the All-Ireland coming out of Ulster. I know you were kind of banging your chest when this came out and saying, you know, Tyrone are still, you know, we're still the top dogs, even though we didn't win Ulster, and even though we were beaten by Monaghan and did a bad year last year. Is there a thing, and this is maybe for the two of you, is there a thing where Tyrone are people a bit maybe overrating them a small bit and going...
I did not say that. I did not bang my chest. I made the point that I actually just didn't believe, because people were saying that Armagh and Derry were the two best teams in Ulster, and I just didn't necessarily agree with that, because I thought Armagh had a very kind route to the Ulster final. And on a different day, you know, like, Tyrone could match them definitely on paper. But I do think Derry are ahead of Tyrone in that sense, just at the minute. You can't really say otherwise. I guess with Tyrone, we've been blessed a lot of years that, like, every time we've been down and everyone looks against you, they seem to be able to turn it around seemingly from nowhere. And they've sort of built up this bedrock of confidence that, like, they can do it again. And, you know, maybe other teams have been scarred by that as well. Like, you know, even an out-of-form Tyrone coming to town, you're still weary of them. So I think, but as the longer the season gets on, the more I'm becoming hopeful rather than sure that that'll be the case. What do you think, Kay?
I would agree with you. You can only go on evidence. You can only go on facts. And as the last three times Tyrone have played Derry have come out on they've come out either they've won three and drew one, or else it's 1-2 and drew two. I can't mind the actual. So Tyrone haven't come out on the right side of any of those games most recently. Obviously, they've been beaten by Armagh as well. So, you know, I understand probably where Paul Flynn and Lee Keegan are coming from, but I think they're coming from maybe a different era. They're coming from teams that would have given them huge games back probably, you know, a few years ago. Lee Keegan obviously played against Tyrone in the All-Ireland final. He came out the right side of the result a few times, All-Ireland semi-final as well. Paul Flynn obviously as well, you know. But I think it's a wee bit different now. Now those two lads, they're probably talking about the teams that they played in rather than the teams that's now playing. So I would probably put Derry as, you know, the informed team, obviously, and also back-to-back Ulster Championships. The facts are there. It's probably a battle for the places just beneath that in the top Ulster team. On any given day, Tyrone are capable, yes, of beating any of those teams. That's, you know, and Tyrone will always believe that. But at the moment, they're not the top dog in Ulster. It's definitely Derry. And what comes after that could be anybody between Armagh, Monaghan, Tyrone. Donegal's not in that category at the minute. But, you know, the biggest thing about Tyrone is they'll always have that chip on their shoulder where they hate. They love to be wrote off, but... Yeah.
And Niall's just done that. Niall's just wrote them off. So,
I wouldn't. You know, that's just the mentality that Tyrone like to play with. You know, they like to play with that mentality of everybody writes us off, backs again the wall, we'll come out swinging.
Yeah, well, a team that definitely does not have that mentality, in my opinion, is Kildare. This team does my head in now, to be honest. They drew with Sligo at the weekend, and like. What do you do with this team? You know, they put in the performance against Dublin. We think they're finally, you know, getting going again. Look at the quality they have on paper. Then they go and play a team that's two divisions below them. And it's all credit to Sligo in this. But what is going on with them?
I was listening to the commentary on Kildare FM. It was wild when the hurling games was on yesterday. And with 10 minutes to go, the commentator just goes, isn't this the time now where just 10 minutes to go, Kildare pulling away, we're 3 points up. Isn't this the time now where you see the difference between the Division 2 teams and the Division 4 teams? The condition shows and Kildare. And so, you know, the game's over according to them. And then you look back at the score and it's a 14-all draw. Sligo got the last 3 points of the game, which is a huge credit to Sligo. Niall Murphy got two. And, you know, huge credit to Sligo. A huge result for them and brilliant stuff for them, but it really is. It's terrible for Kildare to not to win that game. Do you know, they had an up and down league. They had some awful results, some good results, and then you think after the match with Dublin where they ran them close, only 2 points in that, you think they might be, you know, are they going to make a bit of a burst now? And after a kind of a moral victory, maybe like that, you're thinking, right, well, go out and get an actual victory now against a team you should be beating. And they weren't able to do it. So a terrible, terrible result for them.
No, it is. And like, I mean, everything from the outside seemed to be helping them as well. Like Carbang was kicking the lights out for Sligo. He's playing brilliantly. And then he gets pretty harshly sent off. And that was late in the game. You know, like it was just all there for Kildare to
You can't
to,
rely
to
on
it.
Them though, really, as you were saying at the start. Like it's just, you know, it's...
Kyle had a good word for them. What did you compare them to, Kyle?
The Tottenham Hotspur of the GAA world. But it's just, on any given day, you don't know what they're getting. You know, as Niall has rightly pointed out, the Leinster semi-final led for a large part of the game against Dublin. And then they did come up short, obviously, with a couple of points. And you're thinking, right, okay, you know, maybe Dublin's just not fully at it, or else, or is this Kildare team, you know, have they improved from their league? Has that period of time where they've got a few weeks' work underneath their belt come up with a system that'll suit them? But, you know, on any previous results we have seen, you know, maybe with the exception of the Down Donegal game, anybody that's probably playing in a lower division has come out on the wrong side of the results. But it's credit to Sligo and credit to the work that's happened down there. You know, they get nipped in the All-Ireland Under 20 final as well. They were there thereabouts to give away a bad goal at the end. So there's huge work in down there, and they're starting to turn out results. And you can be sure that they'll take a huge, you know, huge positive out of that game, you know, being wrote off, probably having people saying that's Kildare's game, there'll be no upset there. But coming out with a draw gives them hope for the next day out, because, you know, maybe one more win can take them through in the group.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And like, to lose a provincial final the way that they did and come back and put in a performance like that is hugely impressive. And you couldn't really say the same for Clare when they came up against Donegal, although this is nearly more surprising because, you know, this Donegal team have been, you know, dead and buried in the eyes of many people. No one really thought they'd have, I don't know, the personality to come back and win a game. But they managed to pull off the win, and it'll do them the world of good now.
Yeah, it probably was a small bit harsh in them, you know, coming into it and everyone completely writing off Donegal as if, you know, they're beating Dockets. And, you know, they still have brilliant footballers. Like, and I know they're missing some brilliant players, but they still have, you know, players who have been involved in Ulster triumphs, and players, you know, the likes of Owen Bond, Gallagher, Jason McGee, Kieran Thompson, these lads. They're brilliant footballers. They just have, Donegal have had a bad run of it. Things have, you know, between managers going and losing Michael Murphy and injuries, Paddy McBrearty, Ryan McCune, all this. You know, they still have a bit in them, and maybe that result might see them kick on a bit, because you know, I'm sure Kyle will say, like, Donegal, you know, you'd never get an easy game against them anyway.
Yeah, no, Paddy Bradley said after the game, Kyle, that he thinks that Donegal have turned a corner. Would you, I mean, that seems drastic enough too, because they were a long way down, but maybe?
Yeah, well, I suppose they're probably not in they probably, that game probably wasn't as talked about, you know, when you had group games for, like Mayo and Kerry or Tyrone and Galway. They probably were the high profile games of the weekend, and Donegal game sort of went under the radar a wee bit for me, obviously being a Tyrone man, keeping a close eye on it, and then obviously watching the Kerry and Mayo match. But Niall rightly pointed out, you know, you go through the Donegal team, yes, injuries happen to every team, but you have Kieran Thompson. Oisin Gallen is an absolute clinking player, you know, on his day. I know he's been struggling with a hamstring injury in the Ulster semi-final or the Ulster quarter-final against Down, so he'd been struggling. He only came on that day. He wasn't fit at all, probably shouldn't have been on the pitch. You have Darryl Boyle, Jamie Brennan was a thorn in the Tyrone sides that Donegal nipped us a few times in the Ulster Championship, and he was one player that, you know, that we really struggled with. He had that low centre of gravity. He has a real he was a real art in kicking the ball with a real low backstep, like, a bit like how David Clifford. He doesn't need a big backswing. He can pop it over maybe from 30 yards with very, very little room. So Donegal have good players. My take on it was that they were caught between two stools. They had a manager and a system that where they run the ball every single time, run it hard. They had their loop runners. Michael Murphy come off one side, Paddy McBrady come off the other. They got their scores that way. They were really, really good. They never give the ball away. New managers come in and they decide, right, we're going to put Q McFadden into the full forward line. And a bit like we talked about before, I was at a few Donegal league games, lumping high ball in. You know, all it takes is for a full back to get a hand tip, keeper coming out to save over the top fist, and it's away. Q McFadden probably is a strong enough ball winner, takes the free kicks for his club. But there's a way, as we spoke earlier, about getting that ball in, you know, get it in low, forward side and get the runners off in that way. So they probably caught just between a running and kicking game, and they're really progressing either with none. Now, obviously, at the weekend, they turned out the result against Clare. You know, I think it finished 14-9. Clare, probably never an easy place to go to get a result. So then I'm sure that Aidan O'Rourke and Paddy Bradley will be, you know, delighted to get the win, number one, under the belt, but also to get a few players back on the pitch again. Kieran Thompson been struggling a wee bit with injury, and Oisin Gallen. So they have forwards that can cause you damage on any day. It's if whether they can define, you know, not every team is going to have one system. You need two or three for different stages of the game, whether you're running it, whether you're down by a couple of points, you might need to push up. So it's just whether they've got that system for the majority of the game that they can zone in on it and stick to it, because I think, just as I said, that they were caught between two at the moment.
Yeah, and like, their confidence was so badly shaken that a win will just do that the world of good too, and they can have maybe a bit more belief going into the next game, and who knows where it can go from there. I'll do a quick roundup here at the Tailteann Cup. Down were very impressive against Tipperary. Sorry, Niall.
It's going from bad to worse for Tip this year.
Things are going pretty poor in that point. But I think Conor Laverty will have earmarked the Tailteann Cup as a real, you know, possibility. He'll believe that Down can drive for it, and why not? Limerick, another team that have surprised us, turning things around with an impressive win over Carlow. After a brilliant start to the season for Oisin McConville, Wicklow seem to be struggling now. They lost out to Longford. So, you know, you throw in Katie Taylor's loss, it wasn't a good win weekend to be a Wicklow native. Antrim going through the gears, beating Wexford 215-14. Fermanagh dispatched of a confidence-drained Leitrim team after still having recovered from that loss to New York. Meath put back-to-back wins after beating Waterford. Offaly drew a leash, and Cavan took care of business against London. When I look at teams like, you know, Meath and Limerick, and then we mentioned Donegal earlier, like, because of the new format, and we've been harsh on the new format, obviously, for various reasons on competitive games, but the extra games do seem to give teams a chance, Kyle, to regain some form and find momentum a little bit later in the season and maybe salvage something.
100%. On previous occasions, you know, we would have had our provincial championships, then we would have had our back door, beat, you're gone. This, and in this way, both, you know, the group stages gives you three more games, gives you probably two more than you would have, and then if you progress past that, you'll have another one, whether you go any further or not, that's probably depending on that result. But so you're guaranteed three games, you know, likes of Meath, the likes of Limerick, you know, those teams that maybe hadn't had the best league campaigns, they've had a break, beaten the provincial championships, so they've went away, they've spent a bit of time working behind closed doors, playing challenge games, but nothing beats, you know, three games of a high nature, of a high standard at the right time of year to see where you're at, because on any given day, anybody can beat, you know, in the Tailteann Cup, anybody can sort of beat anybody as such. That's why those teams are, you know, grouped together, because they're all of a similar enough nature. So nothing beats games, and players will love that. You know, they'll be week on week. Obviously, there's one home, one away, and one neutral, but that'll not affect players in any way. They'll be loving playing the games, and you just don't know who's going to pick up a wee bit of form. We look at Limerick, you know, obviously not a good league campaign at all, being in Division 2. I seen them play against Derry, was very, very disappointed in them, but they seem to have, you know, they have two wins now. They're sitting at the top of the group, so they'll fancy their chances, you know, of whoever they get in the next round of the Tailteann Cup.
Yeah, they definitely will. That's all we have time for in terms of football. Thanks very much to Kyle for coming on the show. I swear we'll actually get you on someday when Tyrone win. It's just when the next time that'll be, hopefully very soon.
I think you ring me every time just to Tyrone a bit.
Yeah, just need two depressed heads on the show. We'll be back now with some hurling with Niall McIntyre. Thanks to Kyle Coney for helping us out with the football here. We're back now with the hurling with Niall McIntyre, and there's only one real place to start, and that's Limerick v Tipperary. Tipperary got the draw in the end. Limerick looking vulnerable, Niall?
Yeah, well, I suppose they have, a little bit throughout the year, really, going back to the losing to Clare and scraping over Waterford. And I suppose Tip people, as a Tip person, like coming into this game, you maybe have a bit more ambition than usual, than what we're used to coming in against Limerick. But at the same time, you never really know. And even though Tipper winning at half time, seen as Limerick have, they've done us so many times in second half displays, second half just blistering out of the blocks and hammering Tipperary, even though Tipperary were leading at half time, you were still worried that, you know, this could happen again. And it does happen again. Limerick start brilliantly in the second half. Cathal O'Neill picks up two unreal points, and Limerick, before we know it, they're leading the game by a point. But there's definitely, there's something new in the Tipperary team this year under Liam Cahill, and you could see it, I suppose. Like, it was an unbelievable game of hurling, and it started off, Limerick got the first point early on, and then, you know, just the whole way through, there was there were tit for tat. There was Limerick get a point, Tipper get a point. Tipper were leading for more of the game, but wow, it was just it was real hard hitting stuff, and you know, there was very little between them. I'd say, like, Tip for a finish, Tip were out on their feet, and you could see this. There was Limerick lads popping up in space for that last chance. Graham Mulcahy got it, and Peter Casey was inside him. You could nearly blame William O'Donoghue for not giving it to Casey more so, because he would have seen him. But Tipper on the ropes this day, just absolutely goose, like, after sticking it to Limerick for so long. And Tipper probably lucky that last free that John McGrath won was a lucky one to win. But I'd say on balance, a draw was the fair result. And you could nearly see it coming during the second half.
Yeah, and you mentioned there that, like, as a Tip man, this is probably the most confident or hopeful you'd been going up against Limerick in recent years. And Jackie Terrell said on the Sunday game that Limerick actually looked fatigued both physically and mentally. Do you think, like, is it a matter of the aura's sort of cracked now?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's cracked. There's still, you're still thinking, you know, this is Limerick, and Limerick are going to, they're going to click at some stage. But they're playing, they're a little bit more, there's a few more chinks in the armour, definitely. And there's, like, obviously Sean Finn, number one, is a huge loss of cornerback. And, you know, he might have been the man to stick it to Mark Jake Morris yesterday. And as it turned out, Limerick had nobody to stick to Jake Morris, nobody that was able to keep up with him. I thought he was actually the man of the match. I thought he had an unbelievable game, and they'd given it to Noel McGrath, but Morris for me was the best player on the pitch. But, you know, Limerick, they're hitting wides. Peter Casey comes on and hits a wide. They hit a lot of wides when just Declan Hannan hit a wide. When you think that they're coming back and that they have Tipperary in the second half, they're letting them off the hook a small bit. And, do you know, it's just not, and John Kiely has been saying this a lot this year. He was saying it in the league final when they beat Kilkenny. He was saying it after they beat Waterford, and again after they beat Clare, that they're just not taking their chances. They're not as clinical, not as deadly. And I suppose you look at players like Gerard Hegarty has had, by his standards, a terrible start to the year. Just never got into the game yesterday. Could have been taken off at half time. Stayed on, but just wasn't the same player that we've seen him dominate games and catch puckouts and score from everywhere. He's just not in the games. Keane Lynch is the same. He obviously had the hamstring issue against Clare. That went on him, or was a tweak earlier in the year, but he's not himself. Looks slightly off the pace. Daryl Donovan was fairly non-existent in the game yesterday. So these are key players, and when you add that, Sean Finn is out. Kyle Hayes, he hit some very poor wides yesterday as well. They're just not as, you know, the confidence isn't as high as what it had been.
Mm-hmm. No, I think it's fair to say, well, maybe an aura cracked is a bit harsh, because they're certainly still going to be the favourites for the All-Ireland. Definitely lost maybe that predatory instinct, as you say. There was a bit of controversy at the final whistle with your completely unbiased Tipperary eyes. Do you want to tell us what happened?
Yeah, well, there was a bit, you could see it. Liam Cahill was after getting the red card at this stage, so it was all kicking off. Tipperary get a free, a poxy enough free now, I have to say. I think Sean Stack, looking on the referee, I think he just thought, do you know, it's the classic case of draws a fair result and this free is coming. The game as a whole, I think Tipperary people were aggrieved with him. He pulled up Bonner Maher for, he gave a brilliant hand pass, set set Tipperary through on goal and Sean Stack pulled him back. And that was, it was just the wrong decision there. So, you know, the late free, maybe, you know, these things often balance themselves up. But John McGrath won the free, and John McGrath had missed a free, similar position against Cork last week. So it was a lot of pressure for him. And he's only just after coming on as a sub. He was only on the free because Jason Ford, he'd pulled his hamstring against Cork and he was out, and Garrod O'Connor had gone off. He was hitting the frees yesterday and brilliant on the frees. I don't think he missed one. So it was huge pressure on John McGrath for a lad who, you know, apart from winning that free, had barely touched the ball in the game. So for him to step up and nail that was huge. And Noel, you could see it, and Noel is very like unexcitable and very calm always, but you could see it in his post-match interview with Damien Lawler that, you know, he was worked up about this. And when you watch it back, you can see that Noel, straight after John scored it, Noel ran in from the sideline to have a word with Dermot Burns. And Dan McCormack was already having a word with Dermot Burns. And then John McGrath was there on the scene. John had a smile on his face. John was kind of, you know, like nobody really knows what went on with Dermot Burns, but John was kind of smiling as if, like, you know, I scored it anyway, kind of a thing. And then Noel comes in, the big brother, and gets involved. And this is just so uncharacteristic for Noel McGrath to get involved in this. But a bit of a row breaks out between the two teams. But look, it was nothing. There was nothing. I think Marty called it unsavoury on commentary. There was nothing unsavoury about it. You know, just a few players from both teams, a few shoulders, no strokes pulled. It's fairly harmless stuff. Then the camera pans to the two managers, John Kiely and Liam Cahill, and they have a little joke with each other. And, you know, it was a brilliant end to a really exciting and, you know, there was no dirty stroke pull, a real fair and sporting game.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, it was definitely a little bit of added drama just to the cherry on top nearly for the viewer. Clare v Cork was another game. Cork was 7 points down after 40 minutes, and in recent years they would have wilted under pressure, but they came back against Tip and they came back again against Clare. Has the change in mentality been their biggest bonus this year?
Yeah, like they still did lose the game, so they'll be disappointed with that. And like it was a tight game, but I always felt, whether it was just the fact that it was in Cusack Park, or just the fact there's something about Clare. Clare are on a huge rise this year. And, you know, they got to the Munster Minor final, got to the Under 20 final, and now they're the first team into the senior final. So this is huge. There's a huge buzz in Clare at the minute. Brian Lohan, everybody in Clare loves that man. They absolutely love him. Like, and you could see there was pictures of him with Adam Hogan, he's one of their youngest player. He's under 20 and missed out on that Munster Under 20 final. Lohan in straight after final whistle, giving him a big hug. And, you know, Brian Lohan is he's the type of lad, he's cross, like, and I'd say if he's cross to you, you know all about it. He'll give you a huge, like, he'll dig you out of it, I'd say, if you're cross, but if he's a reason to be cross to you. But, you know, there's a huge love for him there, and you can see that the players are really, really playing for him. And, yeah, Clare just, there's a belief there that even when Cork were coming back, Clare just had that little bit extra. And I think they did. They were deserving of the win yesterday.
Yeah, no, still definitely, the day definitely belonged to Clare still. But positives from Cork from a lot of points of view. And they play Limerick next in what's effectively a shootout. Will they see this as an opportunity now, just given the Limerick's form of recent?
They will. They definitely will. And going back a few years ago, Cork were the bogey team, the team that Limerick kind of, they struggled with and struggled to put away. So that's going to be a huge game. Like, Cork they can knock Limerick out of the championship. And, you know, it'll be a tight one because Cork they're hurling well. You know, yesterday, just a few small things. Clare got the run on them before half time, went into the break 5 points up. And in fairness, Cork did get it back. And, you know, you'd put a lot of that down to the subs bench. Shane Barrett was very impressive when he came on, just running straight at Clare, giving them problems. And Shane Kingston. Shane Kingston is just, he's this super sub that he always makes a difference when he comes on. And sometimes he starts and he's not the same player. But he was unbelievable. He won the penalty, scored a great point. And that got Clare that got Cork right back into the game, and Clare getting a bit nervous, and you're thinking then that, you know, this is draw written all over it. Then Dermot Ryan, the man of the moment, he steps up and gets an unbelievable score, really, to win it. He got 3 points from half back, so it was a brilliant performance from him. But I always had that feeling that Clare had, it probably was that it was in Cusack Park, that they just had they had Cork's measure. They moved Peter Duggan inside to the edge of the square, and, you know, he's the 6'5" giant, like, and the other boys, whether it was Tony Kelly for the goal, they're like the small little fishes feeding off the big shark and waiting for the little knockdown off him. And sure, Tony Kelly just finished that goal sublimely, like, but it's another kind of another asset for Clare that they can move Duggan in there and that the boys are running off him. And, you know, they can play it every sort of way, Clare. They can play the short passing, they can lump it into Duggan, or they've Shanahan coming off the bench and they can lump it into him and he'll win it anyway. So Clare probably they deserved it, and they probably had a bit more about them, a bit more to their game than Cork yesterday.
Yeah, and you made the point there about Shane Kingston coming off the bench, and they were talking about that in the Sunday game, that just the negatives for Cork, maybe they're still a bit too reliant on Patrick Horgan. You know, a player like Shane Kingston, you want to start him, but like, he only seems to have that much of an impact when he comes off the bench, and they don't really seem to know their best starting 15 yet. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I suppose the Kingston one is the difficulty.
Yeah,
he's such a good player and probably one of the fastest players in the country, and we've seen it against Kilkenny 2 years ago, Ireland semi-final. He comes off the bench, scores 8 points from play, and you know, then he could start games and just wouldn't get into the game. So they just need that little bit more.
But what do you think that is? Do you think that's like he can read the game really well from the bench and then come on and know exactly what he needs to do while starting the game and getting a feel for it? He struggles with that.
I suppose there's one aspect is definitely the speed that he has when he comes on after 40 minutes, 50 minutes. Like, the last thing a back wants to see that late into game is a lad like Shane Kingston, and he'll burn anybody who tries to stand him up. He'll run around him, like, and as well as that, I suppose it's just different coming on as a sub. There's maybe a little bit less pressure, and do you know, there's a bit more freedom attached to it, kind of. You're floating into the game when everyone else is, they're tired, and it just seems to really suit him. But look, it wasn't a bad display from Cork. Like, there's Clare are so good at the minute that they beat Limerick, they beat Waterford well. There's very few teams who are sticking with Clare, especially in Cusack Park. So do you know, you wouldn't write Cork off yet, but they've Limerick up next. So it's do you know, that's the toughness of the Munster Championship, that if you lose one game, you're really in trouble, like, and that's huge next week, Cork and Limerick.
No, absolutely. And then another game was Westmeath's brilliant comeback against Wexford. Joe Fortune said after the game, look, the first half we simply did not perform. We did not get off the bus. It was embarrassing. We used those words with the players at halftime. We told them to park the first half. There was nothing we could do about it but to go out and perform with pride in the second half. We stayed in there. We saw that Wexford were beginning to panic a bit.
Yeah, well, they did. They definitely did. It was unbelievable to be 17 points down after 33 minutes to come back and win that game. Sure, unheard of sort of stuff. Following this game on Twitter, it was on at the same time as the Tip and Limerick game, and seeing the score at halftime, you're like, right, well, that's a done deal. Wexford 17 points, home and hose. Don't even check it again. And the next thing, you come back to it and Westmeath have won by 2 points. Just unbelievable stuff from them. As Joe Fortune said, it was embarrassing at half time, and you can only imagine his team talk was, lads, we just have to get a bit of pride out of this. Like, they wouldn't have even been thinking about coming back into this game. You're 17 points down. But as it went on, they gradually got back into it. Niall O'Brien and Joseph Boyle were on fire, got the first two goals, in them two boys in the full forward line. And, you know, Wexford have a little bit of a doubt in their head then. It's coming back. It's 11 points. They're 11 points down. Niall Mitchell comes on after 50 minutes. And Niall Mitchell he's the man for Westmeath hurling. He'd been injured. I think it was a knee injury he had earlier in the year. got surgery and that and missed. Do you know, after this was after he had a brilliant club campaign with the Downs in the football and scored the goal for them, got them into the Leinster final against Kilmacud. And, you know, he comes up with these big moments, and he comes on yesterday with 20 minutes to go. And in the last 5 minutes, soars up into the sky above Matthew O'Hanlon, who's probably Wexford's best defender. Mitchell gets up ahead of him, catches the ball, an unbelievable catch for the first goal, flicks it in. The lead is only down to 2 points. And Wexford are just, they don't know what's going on at this stage. Like, they've nearly, like, thinking, we're done here. We're good to go home. Like, the damage is done. And Westmeath just thunder back into the game. And then Mitchell's second goal, the catch was just incredible. He lines it up, and it's definitely worth rewatching. He's comes in from the side, a long ball in from Tommy Doyle, just floated in, bang it into the full forward, let him do what he wants with it. There was no style to this or anything. And Mitchell just there, he kind of waits on the outside of the square, times his jump, and comes across and grabs it from over Matthew Hanlon again and finishes it. Just unbelievable. And they hold on to win by two. She's one of the biggest comebacks ever in the championship. Unbelievable for Westmeath. They were as good as relegated at half time yesterday. They're heading down to Joe McDonagh. And now Wexford they're in a terrible position, because if they lose to Kilkenny next week, that's effectively a relegation playoff for them, because if Westmeath are to lose to Antrim, then Wexford are gone. So, because Westmeath will have them on head to head. So just huge turnaround, unbelievable stuff. And well done to Westmeath. Just never gave up, and it's terrible stuff for Wexford at the same time. Like, they'll be absolutely gutted after that.
Yeah, no, it'll be really tough to come back from that one. And Ian, just to finish up quickly, Kilkenny beat Dublin by 6 points, and Galway made easy work of Antrim.
Yeah, Kilkenny, Dublin had started that one well, and after 25 minutes, they're 8-5 up. And, you know, Danny Sutcliffe was going well, Mark Rogan got a few points, and Sean Curry was moving well for Dublin. But I suppose without being spectacular, Kilkenny just gradually took over, and they have had Dublin's measure for, you know, the last number of years, really. Dublin always, they've been getting hammered by Kilkenny in the last few years. But this time, yeah, Dublin put up more of a fight, but Kilkenny just, you know, they got the scores easier, and they didn't need a goal, or they just tacked away the points, and there was no real outstanding performer from Kilkenny. Like, Paddy Deegan got 3 from play, Tom Phelan, 3 from play, Adrian Mullen came into it late on, Owen Cody. There was nothing outstanding about it. Probably wasn't the best game. I don't think either goalie had a save to make, really. But, you know, I suppose it wasn't the worst result. It wasn't the worst performance from Dublin either. They'll take some positives out of it, but they're a level below Kilkenny, and that was the way it turned out on Saturday again. And sure, Galway, they hammered Antrim, and so they're into the Leinster final now. So Dublin could still reach it, but it looks like it'll be Galway Kilkenny again, as Manny would have predicted at the start. So
mm-hmm. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thank you to Niall for rounding up the hurling for us, and remember to like, share and subscribe to the GAR, and we'll see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.